True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time. We've got a special guest joining us now. It is the man of the hour, Anthony Rizzo, joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Anthony, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. What's up, fellas?
Well, you got some big news, right?
I do. Finally, officially announcing the retirement, coming back to Chicago, retiring a Cub. It's all exciting stuff.
Why now, and what do you envision doing in your role as a team ambassador, Anthony?
It's just coming towards the end of the year. We just had our baby, Anthony Jr., so been just engulfed in joy in that in the last 3 months. And it's coming down to September. Talked to Mr. Ricketts and Crane, and the Cubs are rolling right now. The team's young, and they're scrapping right now. I wouldn't say they're rolling, but it's an exciting time, and to be part of the October run, and just obviously playing there, I'm going to be a Cub forever. So the ambassador role is going to be amazing to do moving forward, and I'm excited for it.
Riz, first of all, congratulations, buddy. Welcome back to Chicago. It's going to be awesome having you along with Emily and Anthony Jr. I want to know, knowing the emotional attachment you have to things and the type of person you are, how important this was to you? Because I just know that your Cub career was so important, and your connections to the city and, with Lurie Hospital, everything that you were, it all says Chicago, it all says Cubs.
It means everything, and it really starts from when I first got there. The players there, Dempster taking me under his wing, Soriano, Castro, Reed Johnson, Jeff Baker, Kerry Wood. I can go on and on. And then getting to know Ernie Hanks, getting to know Billy Williams, seeing all the guys, the past Cubs that would come in, meant so much to me. And I said it all along, but winning the World Series was so much more than just those guys, this 25 guys on the field. It was so many guys who made that happen before us. And now to be able to come back and be one of the Cubs, I guess, greats, to be able to wear the jersey, Ryan Sandberg, who is such a legend in Chicago in his passing, to now, hopefully create another legacy off the field in Chicago will be amazing.
So, Anthony, obviously 14 years in the majors. Congratulations on a long career. The last three with the Yankees. It wasn't that long ago. It seems like you were in the postseason. So you come into this season. And just curious, this is a great landing spot for you. This is a great opportunity. I think Cub fans are going to be really overjoyed. Did you talk to Jed first about maybe being a pinch hitter instead of an ambassador? Or maybe a spot first baseman?
I didn't. I think as the year developed and after last year going to the World Series, I knew last year towards the end it could be it. I put everything I had into baseball. I really enjoyed the last season. I told my parents, I told Emily, I was just like, hey, enjoy these moments, enjoy this playoff run, because I'm not really sure where I'm at, if I want to keep playing or not. And I did want to keep playing at first, and then just as everything developed, if the right opportunity didn't arise, here's where I would be, and I couldn't be happier.
Anthony, we talk to Chris Chelios every week, and he's been pushing you for a part of the roster for months. I'm just curious, when you make the decision to retire and then you're coming back to Chicago, obviously having a child, your wife's from here, I believe, it just all seems to work together the right way. Is it just something that fell like that? Had you been contemplating it for a while? How did it work out?
Well, but talking to Chelly is a tough one because he played till he was 50. So, he's pushing you to keep going. I love Chelly, and what he did in the seventh inning stretch a month or so ago was amazing. He's such a good friend. And to have it come full circle and come back to Chicago means everything. And I really appreciate Tom and Crane reaching out and inviting me back. Honestly, it feeling the love. Obviously, when I got traded, it was kind of out of nowhere, it felt like. And then for them to have Emily and I to dinner and talk to us and come up with the kind of one day retirement as a Cub, you feel the love and you feel the joy, and being back in Chicago is going to be amazing.
Riz, when you look at the future, I know you have the young family, with Anthony Jr., but you are such a natural in communication and broadcasting. Do you envision a career in broadcasting for yourself? Do you look at yourself as someone maybe with the Cubs, maybe nationally? How do you envision your career moving forward?
I'm not sure. I'm still kind of just playing it all by ear, Bruce. I've dabbled a little bit into TV. I've done some stuff on TBS, MLB Network. I've talked to the old grandpa, Rossi, who's one of my best friends, and we've talked about some things. So it's just kind of take it as a go. I didn't really want to rush into anything. Obviously, I was kind of in limbo early on, but we'll see. I really enjoy talking baseball. I enjoy everything that comes with the game and what the game's given to me, and if I could talk it and help anyone out, I would love to do so.
So looking at this year's Cubs team, as an analyst, as somebody who has been following, I imagine, pretty closely, what do you think about them as they enter mid-September? Kyle Tucker, a little bit banged up. They lose their closer, Daniel Palencia. And yet, you just want to get in at this point any way you can. How do you feel about the Cubs heading into October?
I think they're in a good spot. I really do. I think that going into a wild card spot, which isn't obviously locked up or anything yet, they could still win a division, but I think as a realistic outsider looking in, going into a wild card spot when you're a young team can springboard you through a deep run in the playoffs. Because if you get hot in those three games, especially if they're at Wrigley, especially if you have the home field advantage with that atmosphere, it could really springboard you and as a young team, you win one series, it's almost like you're playing with house money, right? And then you win another series, and all right, we're going to do this. So I think they can build a lot of momentum. They have a really good young core, especially with veterans like Happer, Swanson, Kyle Tucker. It's a great team, and it's led by Council, who his pedigree speaks for itself.
Anthony, obviously you mentioned the 2016 team, and you look back and the day that three of you were, or the week that three of you were traded at the same time, Chris Bryant and Javi Baez and yourself. And then you look back at where you guys have gone and the success you might have had afterward. Did you ever envision Kyle Schwarber still being in a position where he had his 50th home run the other day? He's still going strong. He's not done yet. He may threaten 500 homers in his career. How surprised are you, if you are at all?
I mean, it's Wrigley's a tough field, man, for a left-handed hitter with that wind. I know everyone, you know, emphasizes when the wind blows out, but as you guys know, and everyone's around Wrigley every day, when that wind blows in, especially for a left-handed hitter, I think Hap told me there's only one left-handed hitter ever hit 40 home runs there, and that's Billy Williams, which is an insane stat. But for Schwarber to continue to go, he's such a good human being. He's such a good teammate. He's such a good baseball player. And he loves the game. And the years in Chicago, when he was going good, you would never tell when he was going bad. He was the same guy, and he's still the same guy. I talked to him a few weeks ago. He's just still the same Kyle Schwarber, and it's so fun and easy to root for him.
Riz, when I think about you, everybody thinks about your career and the World Series. I'll always think of you, if there's ever a statue of you outside there by Wrigley Field, I hope it's a coach hitting you a fungo from second base to first base as you're practicing your trade, because you were one of the greatest first basemen in Cub history, one of the great first basemen during your career. But to me, that personified the work ethic. What are your thoughts about, you know, the work that you have to put in to be a great player like you were?
It takes a lot. Routine is everything. Being able to adjust your routine is everything. And for me, I was so fortunate to be around Castro when I was younger. He played every single day. Alfonso Soriano played every single day, and seeing their routines. David DeJesus, remember working out with him when I was my first year or two in Chicago, and just the routine and the mentality of what it takes to just play every day, good, bad, or different. You go out and play. Eric Kinski, Tim Buss would just constantly drill in my head, the only way you earn respect in this league is by playing. It doesn't matter if you're good or bad, you earn respect by playing. And the routine defensively is everything. That was always my safe space, because defense is the one thing you can control. Hitting, you can do everything right and still get out. So defense was always my thing, and I loved it, and I really took pride in it.
I'm curious, Anthony, when you think back on your career, when you look at the Cubs, obviously the World Series stands alone, but do you ever think of a moment, of a feeling of like standing in a certain spot and admiring what was going on around you? What would be your abiding kind of memory?
Oh, man, there's a ton, I would say. I think the first one that came to my mind was the 2014 trade deadline when we trained with Samardzija, got Addison Russell. And I just remember talking to Theo and that feeling of like, this will be the last time we sell at the deadline, because we weren't very good in 12, 13. 14, we started building momentum. And that feeling always stands out of kind of a shift in the tide. And then another one is the offseason when we get Joe Maddon. I've always respected Joe from afar. And then John Lester, the premier free agent in 2015, signs with us. And we're like, wow, he believes in this organization and what we're doing. And that just kept springboarding us to that championship.
And you guys won that championship in 2016, obviously. And it changed baseball history, Anthony, and Chicago sports history. I just wonder, we're in the midst of celebrating the 40-year anniversary of the 85 Bears. And the 85 Bears, they stand alone in Chicago sports, and yet there'll be some members of that team that will say they look back fondly, but some with a tinge of regret because they didn't win again. They didn't win another one, and they were positioned to. Do you understand that feeling? Do you look back at, as special as 2016 was? Do you have any regrets about not getting back to the World Series?
No, I don't. I you know, we were so close in 15 in that heartbreak. We made another deep run in 17. And I think when you put it all on the line and you have perspective of how hard it is to win, we had to literally have a 17-minute rain delay amongst many other things to win the World Series, right? We had to have so many things go our way. And in baseball, that's how it goes. And I think that's why you don't see teams repeat like the Yankees did in, 2000, 2001, because it's just so hard to get back there and to win. You have to have so many things go your way. So we had a great team. We had great runs. We did everything we could, and it just didn't work out the other years. But I don't think any of us really will ever lay our head down on the pillow at night knowing we didn't do everything we could to win more.
Talking with Anthony Rizzo, who announced his retirement today. He's going to be celebrated Saturday in a one-day retirement as a Chicago Cub, going to be a team ambassador. Anthony, before we let you go, anything else that you recall fondly about your career that you want to put into perspective and as excited as you are looking ahead?
Yeah, I think the charity work, for sure. Just everything I was able to do off the field with my team and the coaches around me, but my direct team of my inner circle was just so amazing, and I'll always be grateful for that. And my time in Chicago was amazing. I got traded, and it was such a blindside, but going to New York was such a blessing for me and my family as well to be in another historic franchise. So today, you know, I just threw a video on my Instagram, watch it again. The tears are flowing, overwhelmed with joy right now. So I couldn't be happier to be coming back to Chicago, and this weekend's going to be really special. I'm going to have a lot of friends and family there, and I enjoy it. I'm going to sit out in the bleachers, enjoy a game. I went to my first game yesterday at Yankee Stadium, had a hot dog and a beer, and that's just a little warm-up to what will be on Saturday.
They ought to let you, like, jump on top of the tarp and watch a game from there.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. It's a different vantage point when you walk into the stadium as a fan, and doing it for the first time at Wrigley is going to be special.
Thank you so much, Anthony, for joining
us. Thanks, Anthony. Great stuff.
Take care, buddy.
Congratulations. That is Anthony Rizzo. Wow. How about that?
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
The Raheemy and Harris Show with Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I mean, every draft has, like, just pockets that you just don't fall into.
Of all the people to say that, where I'm asking what exactly he meant when he said that, that's Ryan Poles. This is Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. Mark will join us at 125. We continue our segment with Anthony Herring, kind enough to join us for another one. And, Ant, I was reminded of a segment you and I did co-hosting a few months ago where we evaluated at that point what was three Ryan Poles draft classes and how some needed to step up, others needed to perform even more. And then they answer with Ben Johnson and the draft class that we just saw of 2025. And I'm asking myself in a lot of ways the same thing. When Ozzie Trapillo's the backup, Shamar Turner doesn't play, Luther Burden saw limited action, Kyle Manungai didn't get a running back, at least
a carry,
a handoff, nothing. He was in there for a couple of blocking packages. And then Colson Loveland only had two targets. He had two catches. But
don't forget about Karan.
Karan was the year before.
Oh, you're talking about specific.
Karan was inactive as well. Karan Amagaji. So what are your takeaways from what you saw out of the class of 2025 in this game?
You're only going to hit on draft picks to a certain degree, even when you're really successful in the NFL draft. As far as guys you draft that just turn into stars in the sport, they're going to be somewhat infrequent, but we're not seeing anyone who's proven to that commodity yet, who's proven to that extent that they are that they are the guy at the top of the opposing game plan, where you just say the opposing defense or the opposing offense recognizes that individual as a problem who we are just going to have our hands full because we can't do a thing with them. We got to scheme away from them. We got to scheme around them, something, because they are just unstoppable. This force of nature. They don't have any of those guys right now. And it's hard because that is a difficult sort of stature to judge most players by, but the best teams in football do have a couple of those guys, a few of those guys within the roster. And your hope is to be able to draft that individual that you say, you know what? That's someone who we know we can build this thing around for years to come because of the degree of their excellence. And there's a lot of guys worthy of being excited about. I'm excited about Colston Loveland. We'll see whether or not he becomes that, but he's just a game into his NFL career. Kamenanga is a seventh round pick. So my anticipation, I thought the Bears were going to draft a veteran running back to likely pair with DeAndre Swift, and they opted not to do that. But it's hard to sort of juxtapose those couple of things. Luther Burden got some action in the game the other night. From an attitude perspective, a confidence, a swag perspective, for lack of a better term, he seems to be a guy who oozes some of that. So hopefully as he gets some opportunities in game, that shines through. And you see someone who's not afraid to go pluck the ball, mush a defender in the face, and go racing towards the end zone because he just thinks he's that guy. I want to see a little bit more of that exuded by some of the playmakers from the Bears.
Okay, let's broaden that question, what you just said about guys being a quote-unquote problem. We've now got 4 years of draft classes, 34 players. I see one problem. His name's Kyler Gordon. I see 14 guys drafted in the top three rounds. Am I missing anyone in your eyes?
I definitely like the development arc of Javon Dexter, but no, I wouldn't say that he's some kind of a game wrecker at this point in his development. I'm pleased with certain things I've seen from Donnell Wright. It was a bogus holding call on him, but I don't think Donnell Wright, someone folks look at on film and say, well, there's no way we're going to beat that guy, but he's a good, promising, still young football player. But so much of that at certain spots has to marry together where, the rhythm and timing of the quarterback, the decision-making of the head coach, the schematics of the offensive play caller, all those things frequently need to come together for those things. Roma Dunze, I'm confident there are folks in the building who are really hopeful Roma Dunze just continues to show development because there's a skill set that's very apparent. You just like it to show up consistently, especially in critical moments in the game where he does have the wherewithal to just go and pluck the football and keep rolling with it. Make some of these things look easy. Make it look like you're a man amongst boys on occasion. No, there's not guys who I see there with that yet. And that's, part of the discussion of how much of it is scheme, how much of it is the evaluation of the talent in draft, how much of it is just the flow of the game, because I was very encouraged by a lot of things I saw from that Bears defensive front. We haven't seen a D-line put several series together like that where they're just overwhelming the opposing offensive line. It's been a minute since we saw that. We're talking like Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack, types of fronts that were really getting that done at a high level for series upon series. Now, they didn't do it in the fourth quarter, and that's where you want somebody who's your closer, who's the guy that, all right, when they drop back and they're trying to get back into the game, yeah, you've had J.J. McCarthy rattle for the first three quarters, but now they got a little momentum building. And who's the guy that can just slam the door shut on? That would have been nice if that happened the other night, but there's definitely some encouraging signs from that defensive front. But to answer your question, Marshall, no, I don't think you're necessarily missing a list of guys who just on a depth chart, DJ Moore, he's a playmaker, but he's kind of a Swiss Army knife on offense. He's an exceptional playmaker at wide receiver. But Kyler Gordon, yeah, he's a guy that they have to game plan around to know. Jalen Johnson is a player that everyone avoids. He's not a recent Ryan Poles draft pick.
Exactly.
But as far as a guy who, you know, the opponents respect in that way. So for Ryan Poles draft pick, no, I can't really think of one aside from Kyler Gordon that I say opponents have to fear schematically. How do they work around that individual?
Anthony Heron, we appreciate the time and the evaluation along with the perspective. Looking forward to you calling that Iowa game on Big Ten Network as well.
Have fun in Iowa City, big fella.
I appreciate it. Definitely will. We'll be on there 6:30, primetime game, under the lights at Kinnick Stadium. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then I'll be on Sunday morning. We'll have our Fox 32 pregame before the Bears face the Lions.
Can't
oh,
wait.
Yeah. It's a regular Bears Sunday.
I like those.
Right?
Yeah. So you guys will be rocking and rolling over there at Fox 32 for sure. We'll take a look out as we always do. Anthony, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you both.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw On Demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
JT O'Sullivan comes in, so he can play a little bit, see what he can do.
JT O'Sullivan.
It really doesn't matter what I think or what we think. The film will reveal itself.
NFL quarterback for over 10 seasons.
O'Sullivan fires complete. Isaac Bruce has a first down.
O'Sullivan. And that is caught by Colvin.
O'Sullivan to the end zone. Brian Johnson makes the catch. Touchdown 49ers.
Founder of the QB School.
Quarterback School Patreon community. As always, thank you for your continued support. We did it. Regular season, full game analysis.
The internet's quarterback coach.
Look, I understand some of you are going to be in your feelings, okay? And you might as well just earmuffs this whole video.
JT O'Sullivan.
I don't know why you got to do it in front of the kid with the effing. All you got to do is say earmuffs to him. Earmuffs.
Making sure we have the earmuffs on and the blinders. Earmuffs.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Man, this is a delight. We love talking ball with JT O'Sullivan. Support what he's doing with Quarterback School on Patreon. He knows that you, the Bears fan, want to know what's going on with your quarterback, and he is delivering with a two-hour breakdown for you. So go over there and be a part of that community, the Quarterback School on Patreon. He joins us now on Circa Resort and Casino. On the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. JT, thank you so much for joining us yet again. We appreciate when you grace us with your presence. I have a general question to kind of start you out with, and it's the idea of the television copy versus the tape, the all 22. For the person in their car that's like, yeah, you guys keep talking about tape. I saw what I saw. I watched the game. How big of a difference is it in breaking down a quarterback, the version that you see on television versus the all 22?
I mean, I just feel like that's where the real difference is as far as a deep understanding of football. I think you can watch the broadcast version and just watch the ball and come away with a
simplified understanding of, hey, why we lost, what happened, you know, we turned the ball over, we made a bonehead clock management decision, those types, we missed a kick. But if you really want to understand, you know, the technical element of what's going on every single play, what's going on off the screen of that broadcast tight version, you got to watch the All-22 and not only watch it, but have an understanding of what the players are looking at as far as coverages, things that can make you play faster, the different techniques, what the blocks are, what the pass protection is, all those things that you just can't see. Really, not even the coaches can see. You hear coaches reference, oh, I got to watch the film. Well, you were at the game. What do you mean you got to watch the film? And it's one of those things where they don't have a wide enough lens to be able to see all those things in real time. So you got to go back, rewatch it, and then watch really every position when you're coaching it to have an understanding of what happened on that play.
Are there still some moments where if you're not sure what the intent is of the play, then you're not exactly sure what you're seeing with the All-22?
Oh, absolutely. And I try to do a decent job of hedging that. You know, there are really only a handful of people even in the building. Like, you could go ask Bears coaches and they would know what Caleb's read is on every single pass play. They don't sit around in the team staff meetings and talk about the quarterback's reads. And so if you're not in the quarterback room, if you're not the quarterback coach, assistant quarterback coach, coordinator, maybe even sometimes the head coach, you know, depending on what, if you're a defensive guy or not, you're not going to know exactly what the quarterback's supposed to be doing drop wise, eyes wise, read wise, check wise for every single play. It's impossible to do that for every position.
With that in mind, then, let's talk scheme before we talk Caleb. As you watched all these plays, what did you think of the passing attack that Ben Johnson allowed Caleb to function in?
I mean, I thought that it started off with a quarterback who looked like he was really, really trying to hunt completions. And I think that can be one of those things, it can be a little bit misleading, because when you say, yeah, you started 9 for 9 or whatever it was, and that's great. But when you turn on the film, or even the color guy, I think I was listening to the broadcast at that point, you know, there were some opportunities down the field for some shots that we just didn't throw. So is that him not seeing it? Or is that him just being like, hey, they told me to get completions, I'm going to take the easy completion versus push the ball down the field? Only they know that. And so we can't sit here and decipher. We can say, hey, most oftentimes, if you call a big post on play action and you catch quarters, then you probably want to throw it versus this look. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen all the time. You know, only he knows what he sees. You got to check his vision to see, you know, is there two big linemen in his way? But for the most part, many of these NFL plays are universally read and understood. And so you can make some general assumptions about where the ball should go on time. And it just didn't early, but he was able to kind of band-aid it with being able to create, extend, find completions. And then I think you saw things get a little bit tougher when you saw the operation at the line of a scrimmage. Now we're behind the sticks. Now we can't run it that well, you know, and things aren't going our way, and we've got to manufacture those kind of completions. And it's a hell of a lot harder to do that.
What were the things that Brian Flores did? Because it felt like he was doing drop 7, drop 8 early. And then when they got a lead, then he started doing all the stuff that we expect Brian Flores to do. What did you see from what the defense was offering Caleb Williams?
I think that's a good way to look at it. I think from the lens I would look at it from is, if you're Ben Johnson or you're Caleb Williams coming into that game, you have to be prepared for all out pressure early. Like, zeroed up, you got to have your answers. And I thought that they looked like they had answers early. You know, they did that, the center walk up really late and snap the ball really quickly, trying to catch them off guard. Well, they weren't pressuring them. So they kind of lost that battle of guessing about when the pressure was coming. And then when all of a sudden you've got to move the ball, when things feel really hard, then Brian Flores starts, you know, dialing up all these exotic pressures. And now things look a lot more difficult. So they looked like they had a plan early. They just didn't get what they were expecting. Then they had to readjust when Brian starts all of a sudden getting into his deep bag, making things a lot harder, and you've got to move the ball at the end. You feel like you've got to move first downs and things aren't going your way. Now all of a sudden the other team is moving the ball. They have all the momentum, and it just felt like things caved in on us as far as being able to execute on the perimeter versus what those exotic looks are.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's good stuff. Ben Johnson said today, I guess it was yesterday, said that he didn't react well enough and quick enough when Flores wasn't bringing pressure. to your point, JT. And I don't know exactly what that means. How should he attack when there's no pressure coming? More passes, more runs, or specific kinds of stuff? I wonder what he's thinking when he says he didn't attack the way that he should have.
Well, I mean, you really roll in the dice as a play caller because you have to have a zero answer going up against the Vikings constantly. And so when all of a sudden they're not pressuring, you know, are you calling multiple plays in the huddle? Are you calling, hey, we're going to have this, you know, max protect thing, and if it's not there, we're going to check to more of a traditional six-person protection, get multiple guys out? There's lots of different ways to get to it. I don't know how you would have known that other than saying, hey, Flores slow rolled us early on. We didn't have the opportunity to kind of take advantage of those pressure looks where we're trying to trick them with kind of quick sugar huddles and slow walking the center, those types of things. And so it's just one of those things where that's kind of the nuance or the chess match of play callers. And, you know, they got to us. When he says, I should have got to more traditional, you know, drop coverage attacking things, you know, it's tough to say that in real time because, you're looking at a sample size of zero this year. You don't know what their tendencies are, and that's the difficulty of week one ball.
JT O'Sullivan of the QB School, you should check out what he's doing on Patreon, truly. Like, this guy is an asset. If you are a Bears fan, you've got to see what's going on with his channel and the meticulous way that he breaks stuff down. JT, I had a couple of issues, and again, I'm a novice. I'm someone who covered the league, but I didn't play at a high level at all. But there was one particular set of plays that bothered me, and it was when they were trying to do wide receiver screens, and it was set up that one of the plays was DJ Moore is the inside guy and he's got to go reach the corner. And it just felt like from a design standpoint, there was a bit of a flaw. How should that work? Was that the right thing for it to look that way? And how do you make that an effective game 2 versus 1 where you can make the wide receiver screen work?
Well, I would probably push back a little bit and say that that's been a pretty popular way to do that screen for the last handful of years, especially in college football. I call it the Alabama screen. I think Sarkisian used to do it when he was the play caller at Alabama that long ago. At a bunch, they would do it a lot, where it's kind of an unorthodox way to get to the bubble by throwing it from a condensed formation to the outside wide receiver. Now, the part that I had a problem with that play is that don't we throw like a grounder? We throw like a Tebow out there. Goes at the guy's ankles and you got no chance to catch the ball. Okay. The other part I would say is that it's tough because, you know, if you're DJ Moore, okay, and I think I've been as critical as most or any as far as what the film has shown over the course of the last few years with him, you know, I just don't think that's his strength. Like, do we want him as the point guy reach blocking an edge like that in a screen? It seems like that would be a flipped responsibility for me. Again, I'm not the guru play designer who's earned this opportunity to be that in Chicago, but it just felt like a weird ask when it comes to your personnel. And again, you know, people were all over me early in the preseason because I'm getting frustrated by where 15 is playing and where's 2 playing and who's the split end, who's the flanker, doesn't matter. Everybody can do everything. Well, sometimes it's not positionless football. Sometimes one guy is better off the ball and a more traditional flanker movement guy, and sometimes there's a more traditional X inline, bigger, stronger guy. And so it looks like they're still trying to like get a little cute with who's who in the zoo as far as what they're asking guys to do. And I would just lean into the guy's strengths early on and say, hey, let's make sure we're getting DJ Moore touches in space. Like what they tried to do, like you saw them get a little cute with him in the backfield, play action, you know, running zones, those types of things, as opposed to him being the perimeter blocker for a bubble screen.
I want to get to a big picture thing on Caleb in a second, but let's stay on DJ. That play on the second to last drive where they drove down the field right after Komet makes a great catch, and then DJ's wide open on the left side. There's been some speculation about the route, like if DJ was maybe supposed to run a different route and just saw that space and went to it, and Caleb missed him by so much. It was weird. Like, what was your thought on how that play went down?
Honest with you, you remember, your memory is much better than mine. I've watched probably 10 games from the when I watched that game, but I think I remember him throwing up his hand.
Yes.
Like a mailbox. What?
Yes.
I consider like a mailbox. Normally I would say wide receivers only do that when they change the route down the field. Like I think of historically, like Randy Moss used to throw his hand up and just start running, before he even ran by a guy, because he knew he's changing the route, just saying, hey, the mailbox is up, I'm open, I'm going. I kind of lean into thinking that DJ Moore did that on that play. I think that was probably supposed to be a corner or a circus route out, and he just felt like there was no one deep, so he just took it. And then you see kind of the outcome of that is a miscommunication, what looks like a really bad throw, but maybe it's DJ Moore just doing his own thing on the perimeter. Now, do they allow him to do that? If they do, that's a great job by him, and Caleb's got to adjust. Do they not allow him to do that? Well, then what the hell are you doing, bro? You screwed us, and now we're in trouble, and now it looks like we don't know what the hell we're doing as a unit. So, you know, it's easy for you guys to go in there and ask him. I'm not sure you get the real answer, but it looked like he just took the route on his own to take it to a vertical.
Yeah, you're not the only one who thinks that. So that's worth following up on, because that's a big deal in terms of perception and what we know. All right, here's my big question for JT O'Sullivan from the QB School. As I, a novice, watched this, you know, yes, I'm a novice, but I'm also a guy who, like, lived through Mitch Trubisky and and covered that here. You know, I lived through Justin Fields and covered that here. Like, we're supposed to be smarter by now, right? Anyway, when I see Caleb the other night, I kept looking for him to hit the top of his drop and boom, release the ball. And I counted like maybe three times he did that all night long, or four times he did that all night long. It just felt like everything was so late, even sometimes when it was good. And so I wondered tell me your thought on that as a concept, JT.
Well, I mean, first of all, don't sell yourself short. You guys are diehards. I don't care if you didn't play in the league. You know exactly what you're talking about. Don't downplay it to me. And then, you know, the other thing about it is, yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say you'd love to see more hit your back foot, ball out on time within the structure of an NFL offense from Caleb. I think that's fair. I think it's also fair to say there were throws that were there on time in structure that didn't get thrown. And, you know, as people who lived through Fields in Chicago, you know, there were turndowns that were brutal. I don't think we're anywhere close to a brutal turndown situation. I just feel like that's where it needs to see immediate growth. I think that there were still things that are really excited about Caleb Williams, like the stuff he was able to do full. I don't think there's anybody in the league, maybe I can't think of anybody in the league ever, to be able to run full speed like he can sideways and throw the ball with velocity down the field. Now, you can't, that's not structured offensive play. Those are things that happen organically where he can put on the cape and do that. And you don't want to live in that world, but he can do that. And it's really special. What he needs to be able to do is play within the structure of the offense, get the ball out on time, be the point guard, and be the guy who can do those specialty plays when he has to, when he needs to, when the game's on the line late, not always just in the first quarter on the first drive. And then we don't see it for the rest of the game. So it's one of those things where it's a fine line. It's not an easy thing to do, to say, hey, rein it in, know when to make those plays, know when to do that off script stuff versus, hey, it's there on time, understand the drop, the timing, the rhythm of the pro game, and get the ball out on time. And when you get it out on time, you got to make the throws, bro. There were a number of throws that, for whatever reason, weren't on target enough, weren't precise enough from an NFL quarterback, and it's just got to get better, and it's got to get better quickly.
That part that you just brought up, JT, is the one, it keeps kind of going through my mind, where you have a guy that, when he looks at his own success, from the time that he was 10, it was because he was the most special kid on the field. He was doing all the cool stuff and all the crazy stuff. Even at USC, that last year, more so than the year before, he's kind of out there having to make it happen because of all sorts of other circumstances. So I know that you don't necessarily know him, but knowing guys that have had that special talent, how hard is it to convince them that, no, there's going to be the opportunities for you to do the crazy stuff? How do you get them to say, all right, we're doing pure progression and that one's open, I'm just going to go get that first read instead of worrying about where we can make a touchdown?
Yeah, I think it's a delicate, daily, ongoing conversation, battle, however you want to frame it, between the coaching and Caleb. And he's got to be mature enough and in a spot understanding his own career arc to realize this is happening really fast. Like, this can go sideways quickly. And the fact that you need to be able to take what you do naturally, what got you this opportunity, the reason you're number one overall, and grow and trust your coaches. and understand what they're asking you to do and have really good coaching that's coachable, that puts you in situations and people around you to allow you to have that success, to have guys open. You know, I think of the easy analogy is Jaden Daniels last year and Cliff. And when you watched Jaden Daniels' film last year, the number one read, like where the ball's supposed to go, was open a lot. And that's what you'd love to see kind of ease in for this Bears offense to say, hey, let's start scheming things that are there on time. So we start building that confidence to say, hey, this passing game has answers. We have answers at the line of scrimmage. We have answers on the perimeter. And then when it's not there, those things can come naturally to you to escape and create. And this is the part that's kind of Caleb specific. Those escape creative things can't be disasters. We can't be falling all over the place, chucking balls over the middle of the field. We've got to be able to not make a bad play a disaster and go backwards even more with holding on to the ball and taking those unrealistic timed creative plays, spins, runarounds, chuck a ball as we're going down, touch our knee, those types of terrible plays. You just got to eliminate those. Those have to show up once a month, not once a quarter.
Two quick things for JT O'Sullivan. This has been terrific. The Nashawn Wright pick six touchdown looked a lot like Deron Bland in Dallas. There's probably a reason for that, right?
Now the Fighting Al Harris's, you guys are locked in, fired up to see those guys be aggressive all year on the perimeter.
Yeah, I mean, Al Harris, he did it with Trevon Diggs, did it with Deron Bland, and like him jumping the route.
Bland got paid,
Yeah,
too.
He did. Yeah, he did. Al gets guys paid. So, and the other one, what's DeAndre Swift doing when he attacks the hole or not? What's your take on him as a runner?
Oh, man, this is way out of my lane. no, I mean, the thing, I think it's a very delicate conversation coaches have with running backs. They get paid to run the ball. They're in the league because they're good at running the ball. It's one of those things where he's got to trust the unit in front of him. You've got to do everything you possibly can so he understands what the aiming point, what the timing, what those reps look like. But yeah, it can be frustrating. I'll tell you what, if I was a running back, I'd be frustrated that they put a wide receiver back there to take some of my carries too. But it'd be one of those things where those are just, you know, it's part of the deal right now where they're trying to figure out what they are offensively, what he does great. You know, sure, there are opportunities where you thought, man, he might be able to lower his shoulder here and get us a little bit more. But it's one of those things. I think it's a delicate dance with running backs. You know, they know what got them to the league. It's hard to teach them how to run. I think the easy cue that I felt like gives them the most kind of ability to have success getting their foot down and going vertical is saying run through common color. So you're just looking for your color jerseys. You're looking for any space on the majority of those gaps or downhill runs to be able to get what you can get. And then the big plays, they happen organically because you trust your footwork, you trust the path, and you trust those big guys up front.
JT, you have the best collection of Padres caps that I've ever seen. Because I was going through the YouTubes and looking at some of the videos. Your Padres cap game is on tilt. It's fantastic. Are you a fan of the Padres, or is this just like you dug the logo?
Well, I've lived in San Diego for about 20 years. I'm definitely a fan of the Padres. You know, every year we think it's our year, but it's a tough franchise historically to root for. And then I coach a lot of Little League Baseball, and the Padres provide our uniforms. And, you know, I don't wear, no offense to you guys if you're rocking them right now, but I don't wear Velcro hats, you know, those snapback things on the back. I'm a fitted guy, and so I wear New Era hats. I'm pretty stickler about New Era. I should get a New Era deal if you guys know anybody. But I'm gonna rock New Era hats all the time, and so it's just kind of turned into a thing. I used to rock my own QB school hats, but the merch game is not my strength, so I just lean into a good fitted look.
If you got any QB school ones left, I'll take them because I love to wear a good cap. And it looks like we're setting up for Cubs Padres in the playoffs, and we're the home of the Cubs here on the Score, so we can have a little fun with that, JT.
I mean, come on, you guys got a suite? Let's go. I can find my way out there. It's one of those things where the Padres have had some rough injuries, man, but when we're fully loaded and things are going our way, if you've never had a chance to get to a game at Petco, it's a pretty special environment on a Friday night with the City Connects, and the city is pumping when the baseball is good.
I bet Fernando Tatis would have made a pretty good slot receiver if he went that direction. That dude.
I mean, those dudes are big, man. They really are big. It's always shocking in the major leagues when you go down there how wide and thick those guys are. Most of those cats could play edge or linebacker easily.
And Manny Machado's arm would be tantalizing to any football coach. that guy shows up. Yeah, he could absolutely make those throws. JT, you're awesome. Thank you so much. Please, we keep telling you, you've got to be a part of his community at the QB School on Patreon. You will be smarter as a fan. JT, we'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Y'all take it easy.
Chicago offense.
Matt Forte, Tulane University.
Touchdown Bears! A dramatic catch by Matt Forte.
Matt Forte.
Forte, 50-yard run for a touchdown.
You know, just watching Matt Forte on film, watch him here. He can make those jump cuts. I mean, he can plant that left foot and then jump way over to the right and then plant the right foot and go upfield again.
10-year NFL veteran.
Unbelievable teammate. Unbelievable friend.
I'm going to tell my kids about this guy. I'm going to tell my grandkids about this guy. He's a legend. He's somebody that should be in the same conversation with the greats. He's the best player I've ever played with.
Two-time Pro Bowl selection.
Forte picks up another first down and more. He is inside the 10 and will take it in for a Bears touchdown, 32 yards.
That's the whole package right there. We talked about the patience before. Now just the vision.
Matt Forte. 32 yards of excellence.
One of the 100 greatest Bears of all time.
And with that, on his 273rd touch, is now joined Walter Payton with 1,000 rushing yards and now 500 receiving yards. The only two Bears.
The NFL is what have you done for me lately? You know, everybody is always looking for the next best thing.
Underrated, but I still be scoring Matt Forte. Matt Forte with Spiegel and Holmes.
I think we're on record of how important Matt is.
On 670 The Score.
It is the case. Matt Forte joining us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Second all-time in rushing in Bears history. And we get to talk football with him every single week here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show. Matt, we are so excited that you're going to be a part of the team with us, man. It's great, and thank you so much for being a part of it.
You know what, guys? It's a pleasure and an honor to be a part of this team. I'm excited about this. I haven't been on a team in a long time. And it's good to be back, Holmes, with you and Spiegel. You know, it's good to be back with you guys.
We appreciate you, man.
That's awesome, Matt. Love that you said that. Yeah, the four of us on this show feel like a team, and to be able to welcome you in is really cool. And I love that you and Lawrence have this wonderful pre-existing relationship from your time doing television together at NBC Sports Chicago, and Lawrence always used to talk about how he enjoyed watching games with you and being able to talk ball with you. So we're thrilled, man. Like, what was your setup last night? Were you home to watch that game? And we've been waiting for this one a long, long time. Looking forward to the opener, Matt.
Yeah, I was set up at home in the basement watching the game. And reason being, because I wanted to go to my daughter's volleyball game. So I went to that first and then was able to catch the game. I know it was alumni weekend and stuff like that, but you know what? Family first. I am a family man. So I ended up watching the game. It's a school night too. You know, look what I've turned into. Big, you know, all those accolades and those people saying nice things about me on the intro was funny because I'm such a family man now. I'm a changed guy. So, but I was holed up in the basement watching the game and just chilling in the basement.
So what did you take away from what you saw? And what were the things that stood out to you?
Man, a lot has stood out. Man, you know what? First, I'll talk about defense. What stood out to me is how important the three guys that were missing are to the defense. And Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, and then T.J. Edwards. Man, I mean, you can see that they were missing out there because they started off nice, which defense usually starts a little faster than offense, but you know, late in the game, in the fourth quarter, we gave up three touchdowns. That's not something that we should be doing at all. But also, it's just when it comes to Bears defense, especially at home, we can't give up, you know, touchdowns like that. But then when it came to offense, man, I'm a big fan of Ben Johnson. I'm a big fan of Caleb Williams. But again, it just seemed like Caleb's scrambling a lot, and he's running for his life again. And when the pocket was clean in the first half, I mean, I think the stats were that he was 13 of 16. And then Brian Flores turned up the heat and started blitzing in the second half a lot more. And, you know, the completions went down. I think he was 8 for 19. And that is something that we have to deal with, because defenses and defensive coordinators will take and watch film and realize, okay, when we turn up the heat and blitz, you know, the stats and the execution goes down. But one thing that, other than those kind of things that we can control and that we can fix, something that has to get fixed immediately is pre-snap penalties. We had way too many pre-snap penalties, and that's the type of stuff that you see in preseason that you got to get worked out immediately, because we're already, you know, starting behind the ball.
Matt Forte with us here on the Spiegel and Holmes show. In your experience, when you guys had him, when you were playing, who are the pre-snap penalties on? Is it a coaching issue? Is it a quarterback cadence issue? Is it everybody? Is each one its own specific occurrence? What are we dealing with here?
It's everybody. And that can't be cookie cutter where you know everybody on every team is just like that. But at the same time, I think 99% of the time it's everybody. It's on the player, because it's a mental error where mentally you have to be either lined up in the right spot, the cadence has to be the right, you know, call, or you don't jump offside, you know, you're going on two or three, or you're switching the play or switching the call. That's a mental thing on the player. And if it continues, then it's on the coach, because the coach has to really harp on that and teach that and remind guys that this is important. There's a reason, you know, great coaches like, you know, Bill Belichick or so, they didn't have a lot of pre-snap penalties, if at all any, because guys knew, they had the fear in them that I'm going to get cut if I jump off sides, or I'm going to, or if I, you know, have pre-snap penalties. Like, you're playing hard, you're playing in the game, and you know, you end up getting a holding call here and there, like stuff like that does happen. But pre-snap, that's just, you know, we're not focusing on what the task at hand, and you know, we got to be better disciplined. I think that's a discipline issue, but it is team wide. It's a team sport, the ultimate team sport, but it's on everybody, coaches, players, all of us.
Matt, when we're watching Caleb and we look at some of the plays, and granted, we didn't have the all 22 view while we're watching the game last night, but it felt like there were open windows for him to make throws down the field. In the first half, he checked it down. The second half, he was forced to check it down in some cases because of what Brian Flores was doing. When you guys go back over games, do you remember coaches telling Jay, for example, like, hey, man, like, the ball was supposed to go here, why didn't you throw it? And then getting Jay's perspective of what he saw on a play, because as I'm watching Caleb, I'm going, man, there seem to be missed opportunities down the field. How do you get a quarterback to take advantage of those?
Well, Jay didn't get questioned a lot, so that was one of our faults. our coaches probably should have, you know, done those things in the meeting just for accountability purposes. But yes, you're right. When I was looking last night and early in the game, it was like almost as if they told him, hey, you know, if it's not there in your first read, check it down. So he checked it down really quickly, and then in the second half was forced to. But then that led to kind of, when your pocket is clean, missing receivers. There were some times where specifically I think DJ was open on the left side of the field going into the end zone late in the game, and he came open and threw his hand up, and it was way too late that he tried to get to him and ended up overthrowing him. So those are the type of things when it comes to timing and being in the right place and not getting antsy back there where you trust your you know, the line, which is hard to do sometimes. But yeah, I think when you go back on film, they're going to have to readdress that, and they're going to do some stuff with Caleb to try to fix those things where, you know, you're not back there missing guys that may be open. I think he missed Roma Dunze on a post route by checking it down, because he probably was afraid of the pocket collapsing on him.
It's good stuff, Matt, because I got to tell you, the success early felt connected to the way it got worse late. You know what I mean? Like what you're saying, yeah, he was checking it down and being cautious and careful, but then it felt like it was too cautious and careful. What are some of the things they can do to help him be less antsy back there? That's your word, and I think it's a good one for how that looked, especially in the second half.
I think the remedy to issues like that come through the run game. And that's the one thing that is an integral part of this game that we're missing. There was no really explosive runs besides maybe one or two last night. And the average per carry was, I think, specifically like 3 yards a carry. So we didn't have a run game to keep them honest. So in the second half, they just pinned their ears back and started blitzing. And you can see the results of that. So when you play the game safe and you're checking it down, or you're calling some of the plays that aren't taking shots downfield, you put your offense at risk and your quarterback at risk of not being able to get back there and be comfortable. And an extensive running game, a running game that's dynamic and one that is effective, will mitigate those issues a lot of times. And that wasn't there last night.
Ben Johnson after the game said that they never felt in rhythm with the running game, not all on the same page. And he said some of that was on him. So I appreciate him pointing the thumb at that. What did you see? Like, schematically, did it make sense? Did their run attack make sense to you as you watched it? Turns it inside zone, outside zone, or whatever you saw as you're watching?
I think schematically it was decent. I don't think they did anything bad, or he called any bad plays when it came to runs. Like, sometimes I've seen where there's an explosive pass and then we try to do a reverse and lose 10 yards or something like that. It was nothing like that came out of there. I think inside zone and outside zones were called. I would have liked to have seen a couple draws maybe, to keep them honest on that aspect. I think it honestly is the same thing that has been plaguing the Bears for a long time. And up front, everything starts up front. There was a lot of times where DeAndre got the ball early and he's already trying to dodge somebody in the backfield. He didn't have a lot of creases to cut through and to go through. So I think it comes down to really offensive line and the penetration that was allowed on by the Vikings defensive line, and not really pushing those guys off the ball. They really weren't creating any seams for them to run through. And that has to immediately change in order to have our run game, first of all, be a threat, but to take the pressure off of the quarterback.
Man, look at that. Running back blaming the offensive line. Like, come on.
See, I never blamed the offensive line when I played. I just went out there. So now that I'm retired, I can blame them all I want. You know? It's like, it's them. It's all on them. Everything starts up front. You guys got to get better. Come on now.
We are talking with Matt Forte, along with being one of the greatest Bears of all time. He's also an author, two really good books. If you've got kids, the My Hair Can book is excellent. And there's a new book, Stay in the Game, Making the Most of Every Season. So Matt has been diversifying his life after football. It's been one of the sharpest things that I see with him. And so please support him, along with him being on the show. Support him, get the books, share them, give them out as gifts, all of those good things. When it comes to Caleb and getting the most out of what he is as a quarterback, when would you worry? What would be the things that, because this is a new system and it's almost like he's starting over again, what are the things that as a former player you worry about when you're trying to see if a guy's getting to the next level of his ability?
I think I would worry when he's not excited about the mundane of the season, when the wear and the tear and the ups and the highs and the lows, and when there's a lot more lows than highs, and you don't see him getting excited about the passion behind football. That's when I worry, because if it's not in your heart, it's not going to make it to the head. And so it don't matter what system that you're in, there's going to be, you know, bumps and bruises that you got to take those lumps, but then you got to learn from them and keep going after and trying to actually reinvent yourself within the offense. You know, anybody can really have a 1 year wonder, but when defenses scheme against you and they know what you do best and they try to stop you, can you reinvent yourself in a way that is still effective? So I honestly really think that Caleb can make all the throws. I think there's a lot of room to grow still when it comes to the knowledge of understanding defenses and what they do and how to pick them apart, so to speak, when different coverages come your way. And then honestly, and then with the blitz coming, it's been a factor that has been effective against him as a player. So under pressure, yes, he has the ability to escape. He's really elusive, which even last night, this is so funny how he can elude guys in the pocket, because it's almost like he's frantic back there and he's able to just make some of these moves. It's like, wait, how did he even do that? But you don't want your quarterback doing that all the time. But, you know, I think for the most part, to keep it simple, I would get scared when we start throwing a bunch of receiver screens. Because that means, and I can't stand, like, it's third and short and it's like, all right, let's throw a receiver screen, and then we lose 7 yards. You don't trust the offensive line at all, or you don't trust your quarterback going throwing the ball downfield. You're just trying to get quick yards. And you know, defensive know that by now. I mean, it kind of was a trend when I was playing, and I can't stand seeing receiver screens a bunch of times.
Matt Forte, one of the great running backs in the history of the Bears, and that's saying something.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 yards in 5 of his 8 seasons. In 2 of the others, he had over 800. In one of the others, he was 3 yards shy of 1,000.
Look at the catches.
The catches are outrageous. First of all, it's over 400 receiving yards as a running back in every year of his Bears career, except one. Just like, I remember at the time thinking, all right, man, like, other teams might have their Marshall Faulk or their LaDainian Tomlinson, but we got our Matt Forte, you know? And that was pretty cool. In the open, Matt, we heard the highlight of your first game in Indianapolis on a Sunday night in prime time, and you guys blew up the Colts. You had 123 yards. And so watching that last night, some of those players out there playing in their first game, like J.J. McCarthy and others, what do you remember about that first game of your career on a Sunday night? Bears fans remember it very fondly.
Yeah, it was fun hearing the call from those games, and even hearing, you know, some old teammates and Lovey talking about those days. But what I remember from that time, especially being my first game on Sunday Night Football in primetime, was, man, the atmosphere. It's nothing. I don't think anything could recreate that. So the atmosphere first was crazy. And then also I piggybacked off my teammates. You know, a lot of those guys I was playing with played in the Super Bowl 2 years prior against Peyton Manning and the Colts. And just the kind of the mentality and the perspective of going into that game, because nobody was really giving us a chance, and they were already, you know, pissed off, you know, going into the game. And so I was like, man, I gotta turn it up as well, because these guys are feeling a certain way about how the expectation going into the game is not on our side. And man, it ended up being a great game, and, you know, a record setting game, and it was one of those historical moments that even in the time as a young rookie when I was doing it, I had no clue what I was doing. I was just out there playing ball. I knew what I needed to do. I knew the plays. I knew what I had to do. But when it came to the outside stuff, like how big of an accomplishment to come in your first game and to succeed that way, it was just something special, and I'll always remember that as well.
Can you imagine what it was like for J.J. McCarthy, a kid who grew up like watching your specific teams, Matt?
Yeah,
like he grew up a fan of you and the guys that you ran with, and then come back to Soldier Field in your first start, and then have a fourth quarter like he had. It's got to feel amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that has to be an amazing feeling to be a kid that's from here. You know, his grandfather took him to his first Bears game. I think it was a Bears-Vikings game as well. And then you can't even write that any better. Then he plays for the Vikings. And then to have your first start be a comeback win, and you lead your team in that aspect. So that's huge. And shout out to Josh McCown, who's the quarterback's coach over there. He played with us. He's a good friend of mine. And, you know, after throwing a pick six, sometimes your mental can be messed up, but I can tell that Josh probably talked to him over there on the sideline and definitely, you know, got him back in the where mentally, the mental space that he needed to be to lead the team to a comeback. And he kept doing it, and they ended up obviously doing well.
Got to tell you, Matt, that was a very negative experience last night watching that game as a Bears fan. You have helped calm us down.
What he does.
Oh, my God. I feel a sense of serenity. I feel a football serenity with Matt Forte.
You have to understand that the football after show was me,
yeah,
three crazy people, and I say that with love.
Lance Briggs and Alex Brown.
And Olin Krutz.
Oh, three crazy people.
And Matt.
Yeah.
So it was like...
Ooh, so four crazy people.
And Matt.
And so Matt had a heavy lift in terms of serenity.
Yes, he
did.
Yeah. Yes, he was the but I will say that I remember, like it was yesterday when... You sit there and you go, oh, here's the kick that's going to propel the Bears on in the playoffs. And Matt had said before, he's like, this game is going to come down to a kick, and he's going to miss that kick. And then when he kicked, I have video of it too. I have a video of like, because Alex and Lance were praying. They were like, they were on the field.
This is double doink you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. And they were praying, and he misses the kick. And Matt looked at me and he was like, told you. Told you that this was going to happen. He's got a lot of these great stories. So as we continue week after week, Matt, we are going to ask you for a lot of the stories, man. We want to know about, because there are still people that are playing or coaching that you played or were coached by in the league. So being able to dip into all of that knowledge is great. We thank you so much for being on the show, and we can't wait to talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Pleasure, guys, man. That was a great first show, and I appreciate you guys having me on the team with you.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.